Hey guys, welcome back. It's Alita here for another edition of the Sound Singer podcast. I'm so excited for today's episode. But before we jump in, I just wanted to say that it's been 1 year since we launched this podcast. And this year we've had some incredible guest experts covering a wide variety of different topics that singers and voice users face. And so because of your support, your likes, your shares, the podcast has reached a milestone of 1,000 downloads. So I just wanted to take this opportunity to thank all of you for listening and for your support and enthusiasm for the podcast. We really appreciate it. It has meant the world. And so if you have topics or guests that you would like us to interview, please let me know. Feel free to send me a DM on Instagram at Alita Vocal Studio, or send me an email on my website, alitavocalstudio.com. I cannot wait for what's to come. We've got some really cool guests lined up, and I think you're going to enjoy future podcasts. But in the meantime, I just wanted to say once again, thank you for all of your support. My guest today is Charles Simmons. Charles is currently playing George Washington in the UK-Ireland tour of Hamilton. He is a lifelong performer, musician, producer, singer, and voice coach. He's also a fitness expert and has designed the Vox Body program, which has helped countless performers to be able to have better stamina and vocals for stage. His lifelong mission is to entertain, motivate, and inspire, and he's certainly done that. Charles, welcome to the podcast. It's so awesome to see you again.
Well, thank you. It's good to see you again. We haven't spoken in a long time. So
that's yeah. Well, it's great to have you on. And I'm excited that my audience gets to pick your brain and hear about your experience, especially now, because what you're doing is so exciting. I've been following your social media posts about how in 2021, you made the leap of becoming a live performer to now becoming a musical theater performer. So why don't we start by having you tell us about your journey and how you got to where you are today?
Well, yeah, it's a long but interesting story. I'll try to keep it brief. But basically, my journey into musical theater started pre-COVID. You know, it's like nowadays we have pre-COVID and post-COVID. Started in 2018, actually. I was doing some work on my computer. I was getting my Vox Body program ready. Last time we talked, we spoke a lot about that program, my fitness program for musicians, especially for singers. And I got this very interesting email from the casting team for the musical Hamilton in the UK, in London. And at first, when I saw the mail, I thought it was spam. So I found it in my spam folder and I read it. I'm like, okay, this is a joke. This can't be. But they were very serious, and so I contacted them, and we talked for a bit, and a week later, I got the material, the audition material. They wanted me to read specifically for George Washington, of all roles. So I went to London, and I auditioned for Hamilton, and the irony of that situation was, A, I've never done musical theater before in my life. I never studied musical theater. It was never an intention to go into musical theater at all. And then I got this email. So I flew to London and I knew nothing about the show. I had never heard of Hamilton. I knew who Lin Miranda was because he was, I saw him on an episode of How I Met Your Mother, the comedy show. And it was great. I was amazed by his talent and I didn't know that he did stuff like that. I had no idea who he was. So when I went to the audition, all I knew was a rap musical. And it had something to do with one of our founding fathers. I'm like, okay. So I did some research. I did the audition. I made it to the final round. I auditioned for Thomas Kail, actually, the director of the show, the original director of the show. And unfortunately, I didn't get the role. And I was bummed out, but it also kind of awakened my drive to find out more about this show. And so in the process of auditioning for Hamilton, I became a Hamilton ultra super fan and learned everything that I could about the show. And I really ingested as much as I could, learned about the history of the show. Then came COVID. Well, actually, before that, there was some tragedy in my life. My mother had passed away about 6 months later after my audition, and she was a part of that whole process. And so that kind of brought me down quite a bit. And then COVID hit and on lockdown for 2 years. And one of the positive aspects of the COVID lockdown was that Hamilton came out on Disney Plus. So I watched Hamilton at least 200 times since then and just fell in love with the show and fell in love with the character of George Washington, especially because I was a George Washington fan in my childhood. I loved everything George Washington, and I'm an American history nerd anyway. And then in 2020, I found out that they were bringing Hamilton to Germany to do the first foreign language production of this show. And I was like, okay, I've got to get in on this. So problem was, I didn't know anyone in the German musical theater scene. So I called a friend of mine who was performing in Tina at the time. And she hooked me up with her agent. And her agent then became my agent. And then she got me into the door, got my audition materials to them. And in September of 2020, I auditioned for Hamilton in Germany. I speak fluent German. I've been in Germany for 30 years. This is my home. So I auditioned for the show and I made it to all the rounds. And ironically, the final round, Tommy Kail was in the jury. And because it was locked down, no one could travel. So I did my audition per video conferencing. Yeah. So it was Tommy Kail and Alex Lacamoire and the entire team. The only person who wasn't there was Lynn. And we had a great time. I don't think he remembered me from 2018, but that's great. That's fine. And I got the role.
Wow.
And I got the message on January 15th, 2021, that I was selected to play the first George Washington in a foreign language version of Hamilton. And the story gets a lot crazier than that, because Hamilton was my first musical on paper. Fast forward to September of 21, I was at a gig in Northern Germany. I get a call from the production company, from Stage Entertainment, asking me if I would be interested in joining the cast of the musical Tina to play Ike Turner, because two of their actors were injured and they needed someone really fast to jump into those roles. And again, keep in mind, I've never studied musical theater before. And so my first role on stage, after my long career as a singer and as a musician, I played Ike Turner in the musical Tina. So Hamilton was my first musical on paper, but Tina was my first musical on stage. And the rest, as they say, is history. I did Hamilton for a year. We just closed October of 23. Mm-hmm. And then that, we'll probably get to that later on, but I am now currently in London rehearsing for the Hamilton UK tour. The West End show has been running since 2017, and they're going to take it on tour throughout the UK and Ireland. And they selected me to play George Washington, the same role, on the Hamilton UK tour, which makes me effectively the very first Hamilton cast member ever, principal cast member, to play the show in two different languages. So that's the short version.
What an incredible story. And it's so cool to hear that, because, you know, the pandemic kind of interrupted things for a lot of performers.
Yes.
And then to have that sense of hope restored, it's so incredible. And now, can you tell us a tiny bit about what it's like to go from one language to another and performing the same character?
Well, it's very interesting, especially when you consider my work process for learning the show. Because I have been such a Hamilton fan for a long time, I actually learned the show in English first. I've never performed it, but I learned the show in English first. And although I speak German fluently, learning the show in English actually helped me to really understand what the translators were trying to do with the show in German. And honestly, after doing the show in German for a year and now getting back into the English version of the show, I can say without a doubt that what we did in Germany was something very unique and very special. And as far as the writing was concerned, there are parts of the German version of our show that are better than the English version of the show. And Lin Miranda said that himself, because he was at our premiere and he was very much into the translation process. So it's a little bit of a mind-jogging thing. I've had situations, for example, in Germany, where I was on stage performing the show in German, and then all of a sudden I would slip into English, and then I had to jump right back into German, and vice versa. Here in the rehearsal period here in London, I would do a song in English and then find myself not being able to remember the English words because the German kept popping up. So it takes a lot of concentration to get to separate the versions, but it's definitely doable, and it's been a very interesting ride so far.
You know, I would imagine going from being a live performer and musician to being a stage actor and singer is a bit of a transition, because you have to learn lines and memorize scripts. What was that like for you, going to a different side of the performing arts?
Well, I've learned that musical theater is definitely different than the world that I come from, because I get to do my own music. I got to perform, you know, I did lots of cover songs and did different types of events. But different doesn't mean worse. In fact, since I've been doing musical theater, I have found it to be somewhat of a vacation for me. I love it. I love the regularity, the consistency. I love the fact that I know what I have to do when I get on stage. I do exactly that, nothing more, nothing less. Hamilton's a little different than other shows, and I'll get to that in a moment, but just the knowledge that I have to be consistently on point all the time. It's a challenge, but it's a lot of fun. And Hamilton is, for me, it's different, but it's not that different, because, you know, when you consider that Hamilton is basically 50 songs back to back, it's like learning your lines. It's like learning songs for a concert. It's the same thing, the learning process. So for me, it wasn't that much of a switch, and it made it actually quite easy. The fact that I had this background as a live performer with bands and stuff, that made it a lot easier for me to learn the lines to Hamilton quite quickly.
Wow. And part of being in a high energy show like Hamilton, and we've chatted about this, it requires vocal stamina and physical stamina. Yes. So can you chat a little bit about how you maintain your physical fitness while managing a busy performance and rehearsal schedule?
Hamilton is a very physical show. And like all musicals, the performers who are on stage who are dancing also have to sing. And there's no other show currently where that is more the case than in Hamilton, because they're dancing the entire time. They're constantly in motion, and they have to sing these complex harmonies, and they have to be on point with their vocals, and they have to sing dynamically. And the irony of that situation is it's exactly what I do in my program that I developed, Vox Body. It's the exact same thing. In fact, it's a lot more intense than what I know from Vox Body. So that was actually for me quite refreshing to know that the way that I approach vocal training through physical fitness is exactly that which is required to do musical theater. In fact, in the new version of Vox Body that I have coming out soon, I have some of the Hamilton performers from Germany working out with me. So that's fun. And just being in Hamilton has also been kind of the confirmation of my philosophy regarding vocal training and the physicality of singing. And so it really was a great validation and very comforting, and therefore very easy for me to make that adjustment. Plus, practically speaking, you know, our call times are during the rehearsal period. Now our call times were in the morning, and we always had a morning warm-up. We never started with a vocal warm-up. We always started with a physical warm-up. We always started doing aerobics, jumping jacks, push-ups, some stretching, some mobility exercises. And then we go into the vocal thing. You know, in Vox Body, you just do all of that at the same time. But the process is the same. So it was easy for me to maintain a fitness regimen while doing the show. When I was in Germany, we didn't have call time till the evening, like 5:30. So I had plenty of time during the day to go to the gym or go for a run. And I also developed a love for skipping rope. That's one of my favorite exercises. And also incorporate some vocal stuff while I do all this stuff. Or I would just do my own program. And that's what helped keep me fit for the show.
Can you tell us a bit about your program? And if someone's interested in looking into it further, where would they find that?
Well, Vox Body has been available since 2017. It's an online program. I have a website, a membership-based website, voxbody.com, voxxbody.com. And it ran quite well for a while, especially during the lockdown. I had more clients during the lockdown than in any period since the release of Vox Body in 2017. I've revamped the system. I've added new workouts. But the most important change that I made to Vox Body is, and it will be released towards the end of the year or the beginning of next year, it's an app. I made it into an app for iOS and Android devices, also for web TV or smart TV devices. So you can literally use it anywhere. If you have a mobile device, you'll be able to get the workouts. I added 13 brand new workouts, and it's more like a music genre-based workout. So if you love hip-hop, then you can get workouts with just hip-hop music in it. If you love rock music, you can get workouts where the soundtrack is just rock music. If you love world music, reggae or dance hall or Latin music, salsa, whatever, I have workouts for all those different genres of music. And again, the extra added bonus is I have some of my Hamilton colleagues working out with me. So it was a lot of fun to make those videos, and those will be available soon.
That sounds like a lot of fun. And I can't think of a better way to warm up your voice and also do physical warm-ups too. Can you talk a little bit about your philosophy around that, warming up the body and then warming up the voice, and what that is like?
Well, there's a couple of different ways that I like to explain my philosophy. And I found over the years that one of the best ways is in the form of a quote. For those of your viewers and listeners who know the movie Batman Begins with Christian Bale and Liam Neeson. And there was a scene where they're out in, it's very cold, where they're training, and Bruce Wayne is training with Ra's al Ghul, and he hits him and he falls under the ice. And they're sitting around a fire, and Bruce Wayne is rubbing his arms, trying to get warm. And Liam Neeson says to him, "Rub your chest, your arms will take care of themselves." And that's kind of my philosophy about using the physicality to warm up the voice. Get your body warm, get your blood flowing, get your body, your core body temperature up, and your voice will start to take care of itself. Because a lot of people tend to forget that the voice is made up of muscles and tissues, just like everything else in your body, and it requires blood flow. And what's better way to get the blood flowing to your body than physical movement? And so that really has changed my way of thinking over the years about vocal warm-up, about vocal training. I'm the kind of guy who doesn't do a lot of warming up in the sense that of singing scales or sirens or glissandos or whatever. I do mostly physical warm-ups and very simple vocal warm-ups because I want my body to adjust, to adapt in a natural way, and I don't want to oversing. You know, we forget that we talk all the time. So if you're the kind of person who talks a lot, either through your job or through interactions with other people, your voice is pretty much already warm depending on when you start speech. So I always found, or over the years, I found that doing too many vocal warm-ups is detrimental to vocal health. So I'd rather do 20 push-ups or running in place for about 5 minutes as opposed to doing a vocal warm-up or doing them at the same time. So yeah, vocal warm-ups are great, but it's not the end-all be-all to getting your voice prepared for singing, at least in my experience.
I totally agree. There's something great about doing a cardiovascular exercise right before vocalizing. I feel like my voice just works so much better.
It doesn't have to be heavy cardiovascular stuff. It can be going for a walk and just talking or singing, you know, with a pair of headphones on, or skipping rope, or doing a couple of jumping jacks. One of my favorite vocal warm-ups is to actually do push-ups and do sirens at the same time. You know, just like knee push-ups, just, you know, slowly down, slowly back up, and then do a siren on the way down, go up on the way down, go down on the way up. And that also helps me get my mind-muscle connection, that coordination between the cords and the muscles in your body. And there are so many great exercises that one can do to warm up the voice without having to specifically focus on doing the voice. For some people, for a lot of people, that works fine. But I'm just not convinced that that is the only way to properly warm up the voice, especially when you consider, depending on what you do, if you're a live performer, if you do musical theater, if you're in a band, you're gonna be moving. And that's a mistake a lot of people make, is they can't coordinate their movement with their vocal movement. And then it leads to strain and it leads to tension. And so getting that out of the way kind of ahead of time makes the actual show or the actual performance easier, at least in my experience and the experience of my thousands of clients.
That is amazing. And the other thing I was going to say is, you're not only doing cardiovascular work, you're incorporating strength. And this is something I'm super passionate about. You need leg strength to be on stage as a performer in a show like Hamilton. How much strength training do you incorporate throughout the week for your own personal journey?
Well, the amount of strength training that I do is really specifically tailored to my body, to my age, to my daily activity. I go to the gym 4 days a week, but the way that I train, I split my training up between upper body and lower body. And because of my age, I don't do so much strength training because I have nothing to prove to anybody. I'm not an ego lifter. I really lift to maintain good bodily function, to maintain my joint health. I do lots of mobility work. I do lots of, you know, body weight movements. Again, skipping rope is now my favorite exercise because, you know, it not only gives you that cardiovascular workout, it trains your coordination. And especially when you incorporate like what I like to do like tricks, you know, like boxer style, you know, I do lots of stuff like that. I learned how to do that. I couldn't skip rope to save my life 2 years ago, but now I'm a junkie. So you really have to tailor it to your own individual needs, but strength training is something that can be very helpful to the vocalist, especially core training, you know, your midsection, lower back training, mid back training. Those are all the muscles that are needed to maintain endurance. Vocal endurance is very much dependent on what happens in your midsection. And as you said, your legs, because your legs, that's the biggest muscle group in your body. And if your legs are fit, then you should be able to notice that singing becomes a lot easier depending on the level of activity you have on stage. So strength training is a very important part of my vocal regimen. It's not the only thing, but it's one key element of that.
And cardiovascular work. Now, would you say with cardio, would you sort of encourage people to sing and do cardio at the same time, or to build up their vocal stamina for stage?
I would encourage people to find a healthy mix. Or what I mean by that is, there are certain strength training moves and mobility moves that have a cardiovascular element to them. I don't recommend to my clients that they do a strictly cardio-based workout, because a lot of times that's unnecessary. Because there are certain movements that you can do, like if you do, for example, body weight squats, if you just do normal squats without any weights, just like crossing your hands, your arms across your chest, and just do those at a nice pace over time, that gives you a kind of a cardio effect. So it's not really necessary to do what I do, like skip rope or go for a run or whatever and sing at the same time. But stuff like, yeah, like squats, lunges,
mentioned push-ups too.
Push-ups, yeah. That's a great exercise. Planks, certain types of planks, active planks. I've over the years, I've kind of gone away from doing isometric planks where you just hold your body in place, and gotten into more of the active type of planks, like side planks where you kind of bend your hips up in the air and back down, or knee planks where you're in a plank position and then you touch your knees to the ground and then take them up and go back down and come back. Those are great strength-based exercises with a cardio element, and then trying to coordinate that with your vocal movements. I wouldn't get crazy with certain vocal movements. I usually recommend that my clients do very simple vocal exercises that take you through your range. They don't have to take you through your entire range at once. You can start off doing like intervals, like low intervals, fifths or thirds, and then just continually go up and then do some full range stuff and all that while you're in motion. So keeping it simple is always, when it comes to the vocals, always the best thing. Unless, of course, you're training to, do crazy R&B gospel riffs or, melismatic singing, classical, whatever, then you can get into the more complex vocal movements. But I generally recommend keeping it as simple as possible.
A little goes a long way, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. As a vocal coach, I often talk about the importance of having a pre-performance routine. Mm-hmm. What is yours like? And do you ever get nervous before a show?
The direct answer to that question is yes. I am always nervous before a show. And I've been doing this for a very long time, but it's like the old saying, if you're not scared, you don't care. So I'm always nervous. I suffered from extreme stage fright as a child, and it took me a very long time to get over that and to learn how to convert that nervous energy into something positive for my performance. So yeah, I'm always nervous. I'm a little bit of a perfectionist. The thing about Hamilton, what makes it so beautiful is it's such a perfect show because of its imperfection. It never looks the same on a given night. And I've done, in Germany, I've done 420 performances of Hamilton, and I was rarely sick. And each performance was a little bit different. And that's just a testament to how the show is built, how my training, how my prep for this show, or for shows in general, how that is. I usually do not warm up before a show, in the sense that I don't sing scales. I don't get crazy with that stuff. I usually take the very opposite approach. Because I work out during the whole day and I'm always doing some kind of activity, I keep my mouth shut usually. I'll read a book. I'll hum a little bit. I'll go through the lyrics or the melodies in my mind. I'll sing the songs very quietly, but I don't do active warm-ups because it's not necessary. And I also try to keep my mind occupied. One of the habits I developed during Hamilton is I started collecting Rubik's cubes. And I've had fans from all over the world literally send me all these crazy cubes, and I take them backstage, and while all of my colleagues are, doing their vocal warm-ups and doing all that crazy stuff, I'll sit down in my chair and I'll just mess around with my cube, and I'll sing my lyrics in the background very softly, but with a full voice, to get the chords active. And that's how I prepare.
Yeah. I love that. That's so cool, because you're keeping your mind active and you're grounding yourself by doing an activity that's tactile. It sounds like you yourself have carved out a routine that works well for you.
Yes.
I often agree that sometimes we over warm up. Sometimes we do too much. And for a physically and vocally demanding show like Hamilton, I'd imagine you don't want to, expend your energy before you step on stage.
That's exactly right. But that's also something that I learned in my years as a live performer with various bands, especially in the period of my career where I sang in a rock band. At the beginning of my rock phase, I warmed up all the time because I thought that's what I had to do to get that raw, nasty sound. And it was horrible. It was the worst thing I could have possibly done. So I had to change my strategy a little bit. And as you said earlier, less is more sometimes. And so that's when I developed those habits, like you said, doing something tactile, calming myself down, but still keeping active, doing those mind muscle coordinative things and singing kind of in the background to activate everything, you know, because you're going to be active when you're on stage anyway. So you don't want to blow out the engine before you start moving the car. So I am not a huge fan of warming up before a show. But again, every person is different. Everyone has their own routine. But as long as people don't overdo it and just do it with a sense of fun and not with a sense of duty, that's another very important point that I also try to teach my students. Don't let it become a chore, you know, find some joy in it, because that's what's going to help you get through a show more than singing, you know, octave scales for 10 minutes before you go on stage. So.
Absolutely. That is some great advice. A couple more questions and then I'm going to let you go, because I know you got a lot going on.
All good. No problem.
We've talked about, So do you have any advice? Can you offer some advice for aspiring performers looking to excel in both the musical theater world and also just the entertainment industry in general?
You hear this a lot from motivational speakers, from coaches. Find your niche. Don't do things that are popular. Do things that make you feel good. Do things. It's difficult to advise somebody to be unique, but I think that advice does hold weight, because there are way too many performers nowadays who try to copy what's already out there because they think it'll help them get further. And nothing can be further from the truth. You know, you have to do what's in your gut. You have to do what you feel, because those people who you are copying, that's exactly what they did. So, you know, don't spend so much time worrying about the current trend. Try to think about maybe being the trendsetter instead of the trend follower. And that gives you a lot of freedom to do what you feel, to do what feels good to you. And I think once people understand that, it becomes a lot easier to maintain the endurance that it takes to make it in this business. The other thing I would say is, you're never too old. It's never too late to find your thing. I've been a musical theater performer for all of 2.5 years now. I never thought I would do musical theater. I'm 53 years old and I just got into the musical theater game and I love it. And I'm very happy in what I've been doing. But the things that I did also before, when I developed the program, those were all things, those were my passions. Those were things that I loved. And I started that very late in life. So just because it might not work now doesn't mean that it won't work later. So consistency, stay with it. Consistency will take you a lot further than talent will.
I love that advice. You know, planting your seeds earlier in the game led you to where you are today, right?
Exactly.
That, and it gives me such hope, because those of us that are aging, just saying, sometimes we think, okay, it's all over for me at whatever age, right? And I think it's so important to highlight that when you're a performer for life, if that's what you want. Yes. That, you know, there are roles for people in their 60s, 70s, and 80s. And so you can't just think of performance as being a young person's job.
And not just in performance, but in all areas of life. There are people who didn't find their stride until much later in life. When I think about the world's oldest active female bodybuilder, she's a competitive bodybuilder at 83 years old, and she looks amazing. And there are so many different examples of people who find their stride later in life. And all that tells us is, you're never too old to follow your dream. You're never too old to go after your passion. And so that's something that I coach a lot of kids who want to go into talent shows like The Voice or American Idol or whatever. And I'm honest with them. I say, you know, be conscious of what you're getting into. But if that's what you want to do, do it. be clear on what you're doing or what you're getting yourself into. And if it doesn't work, that has no bearing whatsoever on your level of commitment or your level of talent, because there will always be something else. I was on The Voice 12 years ago.
Wow.
I did all kinds of crazy stuff during the younger, you know, when I was younger in my career. And again, I'm hitting my stride now in my 50s. So, you know, if you love what you do, keep doing it as long as you can, and use every setback or failure that you experience as a tool, as a motivation to take you to the next level. Because only through failure is how we learn. And I think a lot of younger people need to understand that.
That's great advice. And also be willing to see, you know, to be willing to have an open mind that it might look different. Success might look different than what you would have imagined, right? Because the success you're having today in your career is totally different from maybe what you sort of aspired to do in your 20s and 30s.
That is exactly right. And I am testament to that. You know, I always wanted to be a rock star when I was a kid. When I was in high school, that I was training to win a Grammy, to put it that way. It never came to that. That doesn't mean it probably won't. But over the years, I've learned that you know, your focus can shift. Your interests can shift. When I got out of rock star mode, it was through my desire to be a rock star that I learned about The Voice, that I learned that I developed this love for coaching and for teaching. And eventually, this love that I have for this wonderful job that I'm doing right now in musical theater, that all came from that initial dream, but it evolved. Allow yourself to evolve. Don't get caught up on one thing. And even, you know, I've coached some very successful international pop stars, and they are following their dream, but their dream was much like mine. They wanted to go in one direction and they ended up going in a totally different direction, and it worked out for them. But that doesn't mean that the dream they had before is any less valid. It's a learning tool. You know, life is a journey. And so, you know, it's our job as human beings to learn from the journey and see where it takes us. So,
absolutely. Well, this has been an amazing conversation. Charles, can you tell us where people can find you?
Well, I am, as we said at the top of the interview, I am currently in the UK. I am on the Hamilton UK tour. I will be here in the UK until January of 25. And I'm very active on social media, mostly on Instagram. So people who want to know about my journey, the things that I am doing now and what I've been doing in the past, they can find me on Instagram under the underline Charles underline Simmons. You can find my website, my private website, charlessimmons.com, and also my Vox Body website, VoxBody, VOXXBody.com.
And YouTube as well?
YouTube, I'm on YouTube as well. Unfortunately, I'm not as active on YouTube as I am on Instagram, but I'm going to try to change that during my time here in the UK. Instagram has just kind of morphed into my go-to social media place. I don't do TikTok at all with the tour and all the other things that I'm doing. Instagram is my number one hangout. So,
awesome. Thank you so much, Charles. I hope to have you back on, and best of luck with the show.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
It's great to talk to you. It's been great.
Thank you.